You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with the under-16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Ulster. Yeah.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome to Series 2, Episode 14 of Cawley's Call. Thank you for joining us for another week, and we're delighted to say it. We've a very special guest. Stewie, the world is back, the country's back, the sun is shining, and we have guests back in the studio. We're happy, we're very happy. A good friend of League of Ireland Football, I suppose. I spoke to him last year when we started off these lockdown chats. It's progressed into the podcast, and I'm delighted to say that he's able to join us in studio tonight, Mr. Owen Doyle. Doyler, how are you?
I'm all good, thank you.
It's good to see you.
Thanks for having me on, big fan.
Big fan?
Yeah, big fan of the show.
Oh, you'll be back.
Of me?
You're on again next
week. Were you talking to him on Instagram, were you?
Where it all started, Stu.
You're a bigger fool, yeah.
Where everything starts nowadays, Instagram. How are you, Stu?
I'm all right, yeah.
Grumpy. You're grumpy.
Work. Why do we have to work at all?
I know. Me and Doyle are coming in here looking like professional footballers.
I know, yeah. Stop.
And you look like a stressed out businessman.
I'm sorry. I apologise, Owen. I'm going to tell you a great story now in a minute, but keep going.
So yeah, Doyle, how are you?
I'm good, yeah.
You're home for a few days?
A few weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
A few weeks. Tell us.
Do you want to do a bit of work?
You've got plenty on, don't worry.
Tell us actually what you've been telling us off air in terms of, you might not go back.
No, I'll definitely be going back, but I'll be definitely moving home when I finished over there. Like, yeah, I want to go back into the league here and stuff.
Okay, but we'll get into the whole, I suppose, the career side of things and how you went over and how it's been going for you. And it's been going so well. You've had such an unbelievable run of it, and that continued again this year, obviously. Topped off by promotion as well, but the goals keep flowing for you.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying it, yeah. Obviously I'll start it over here, and I'll always be grateful to the league, the chance it gave me and stuff, and no, it's still going well, yeah.
And in terms of, I suppose, where it started, there was the Shamrock Rovers stuff, but the Sligo Rovers one was the big one where you came to real prominence in terms of the goals that you were scoring, coming to people's attention. And Sligo Rovers, it's funny that the timing that we have you in now, because they're riding high again in the league, sitting top of the league, Stu.
Yeah, Alan Mount should have noticed.
Sitting top of the league, which is brilliant, and there's a lot of positivity around Sligo at the moment, and both off the pitch as well, they have big plans for the ground. But looking back on your time there, we were only talking about it off air and obviously under Paul Cook, but it was the time when things really began to kick off, the spell of success that they've had, and it's carried on over the years. But you had a brilliant time in Sligo.
Yeah, magic, best days of my life there, on and off the pitch.
Really, yeah?
Ah, yeah, the laugh we used to have. Like, all of us living on top of each other, so being in out of each other's houses all the time, and we were all young and at it. And as the more successful we got, like the last year I was there, I was supposed to carry on going out all the time. That kind of had died down a bit because lads were on and were trying to achieve stuff. But now I'll always be grateful to the club. They were great for me. Obviously Cookie as well, he's obviously gone on to do great things, and so many players that were in that team have as well. So yeah, it was a hugely successful time for the club then, and they've gone on to do other things. I wish I had been able to win the league with them. I think the year that my last year there, if the season had went on another month, we might have won it because we were coming to our best at the end. I think Rovers pipped us, but nah, brilliant time, brilliant.
And it's funny you say it's the best time of your life, because I spoke to Paul there about 6-8 weeks ago before we kicked off Series 2, and he actually genuinely meant that as well. He said the 4 years that he had at Sligo Rovers was the best days of his life, which for Paul Cook, considering the career that he had as a player in England and the success that he's gone on to have as a manager, it's a big statement. But you're of the same opinion, your best days as well.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I think when you play under Cookie, you realise what he's able to do. He's one of them lads where he's obviously the authoritarian, but he's a lad. So like you're laughing at him one minute, and then the next minute he's screaming at you, and then the next minute he's laughing at you, and you'd run through brick walls for him. So he's if you look at where he brought the club from, so when I went in that season, we were fighting relegation, to go on to be challenging for titles and winning all the cups that we won over them 2 or 3 years. Obviously brilliant for him, so you can imagine he still sees the place very fondly, because he brought it from something that was rock bottom to to the heights of the...
Yeah, because even speaking to him, I found it not crazy, but he said, he was telling the story about when he flew in first and there was feck all people at the match and the pitch wasn't great and he's kind of looking around. But he firmly believed that night, and I think he told the people involved. Now, as he said to himself, he was probably just telling them what they wanted to hear at the time as well to get the job. But he firmly believed, he says, I'll bring success to this place. And they were probably looking at him thinking, really? And
that's because they were shit when he went there.
Yeah, but still, Stu, like, it's a big statement to make. And when you think of what they went on to achieve in terms of what they were competing against with the Dublin clubs, and the one thing that people always say, even nowadays you hear them saying it, and I'd always argue against it as a Sligo Rovers fan, was, oh, well, it's hard to get the players down to the Northwest. But you look at the standard of players that you had playing, only got you down and followed on after in terms of Joseph and Richie Ryan and the best of players, Jason McGuinness, Quigley. So I never really bought into that, but it was probably because of him that they were all coming down as well.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. Yeah, he's obviously very good at his job and he comes across great in the media. You know, he's a bit of a character, and I know from the outside, lads are probably, geez, I'd love to play for that fella. I know I've had that picture with other managers over the years, especially in England. You know, you see them in the press and you're thinking, God, he'd be great to play for. And he is, like, he is.
Is that the magic of Moan in terms of...
His man management's unbelievable, but you look from the outside and you think, this fella's just on the sideline spilling coffee all over his hands and stuff, and you're like, how is this fella know anything about football? But his, like, detail when he goes into tactics, I've never seen anything like it. Now, honest to God, I haven't seen a manager since.
I'm just wondering, right, at Sligo, would I be right in saying he didn't have to deal with agents or any of that kind of mess? It was more like a one-on-one. He'll deal with you if you had an issue, or if he was signing you, he would talk to you one-to-one. And is he that kind of a manager? Does he like kind of honesty from the player? He knows that if he kind of looks into your eyes, you'll give him something back.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's one of them. Yeah, he gets you in. I know even, and I've obviously played from over there as well, and he does have to deal with the agents and stuff. But if that player comes in and he doesn't like them, or their attitude isn't right, or they're arrogant or like that, now you're gone. You're gone. Yeah. You won't even be training with the lads. He just doesn't want that in the environment.
Don't get Shuey started on agents. We'll be here all night.
Never had an agent.
No, you haven't. But even speaking to one outside, the agents are so prominent now, and that's not a good thing.
They're ruining the game, aren't they? Yeah.
But I suppose then moving on from there, Doyler, it was such a brilliant time for you. You got the move to Scotland over to Hibs. How do you kind of look back on that time? Because did it go as well as what you would hope to?
I think, like, obviously Nutsy brought me over there, and when I first went over, the difference in level was huge. Like, I found that straight away. Like, I had to get into the gym straight away and beef up and stuff to kind of be amongst them. I signed in January, so I had the half season, whatever, and I knew that the second season would have been make or break for me over there. So I came back into pre-season fit and had a good go of it. They tried to sign me back, like, they tried to hold on to me and stuff, but Cookie came in for me again at Chesterfield. But now up there, I had a great time. What a club, like, what a city to live in. Like, you're looking at, I think the average about 10,000 season ticket holders. We back-to-back cup finals, and we both lost them and stuff, but we good cup runs and that. But it was a great time. Like, I look fondly back in the place.
Because with Pat, like, obviously we have a big relationship with Pat and we're mad about Pat. Pat done really well there. I felt he was harshly done by, obviously the cup final killed him, the losing the Hearts and stuff.
Yeah.
But I often think, if, like, you look at the success Pat had here with us and then obviously went over there, and it's just a pity things never, I suppose it's like everything, the more than the career you had yourself, a manager needs a bit of luck as well.
Yeah, but if you look at what happened to the club when he left, it just crumbled. They got relegated very, very sharpish after that. So I think people don't really realise what he had to maybe go through behind the scenes there to get the club to where it actually was.
I actually went over to see his play.
I have a question about that weekend, actually.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, I've actually... Because it was the weekend that Gary Deegan got his jaw broken.
Was that the same weekend?
That was the same weekend, yeah. So
he was out that weekend?
I was out because I probably deserved to be out. No, I was over there watching you.
I remember talking to Deegan. I goes, oh, he's going to have a great weekend over here now.
So we went to the training ground and had a look at the lads. And it was a great setup. It really was, like, you know. And you could see Nutsy was enjoying it. I think he took an awful lot. He brought an awful lot on himself, but he was really enjoying it at the time. Yeah, and we went out for a few drinks that night, and Saturday after the game, and he gets a phone call to say that Gary has gone to hospital. He's broken the jaw. Like, you know, basically someone came up from behind him at a taxi rank and smashed him in the face.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, it was outrageous. Like, you know, so I remember thinking, oh no. Because Diego was flying for us at the moment. You were flying as well, I have to say. That was a very, very good team. That was when I first saw Tim Clancy play. And remember, he stood out to me, Tim did, not because only for the very reason he had no real pace.
Never got
he always got himself out of trouble. So much composure. Just knew how to get him out of trouble. Like, you know, you're a very good side that side half. That was the year you actually got to the cup final, right? That was the first year.
Back to back, we saw the first year was Hearts, and then the next year was, I think you came over the next year, we beat Celtic, beat us in the cup final.
Yeah,
the
that
year
was
after.
Yeah.
We're going to get into the Irish side of things because I know, Doyle, you've been following the games and you're a mad League of Ireland fan. And obviously, Tim is a friend of yours and doing great things in Namoran Diga as well as having a brilliant season for them. So we will get into that. But just something you mentioned there in terms of straight away you noticed the level, the change from where you were playing obviously in the league here and then you're going to the Scottish Premier League, but also on Pat and the managerial thing, and you think of the career you've gone through, the different clubs or whatever, and we always speak about,
need more than one page for them clubs,
more clubs than me. But you're the first person ever to hear more clubs than me. but the thing about I suppose we always talk here, one of the criticisms is that we don't have an industry here. And it's something that we should have for managers and staff so that there's jobs for people. And obviously, you look at Scotland and England, it's full-on football industry. But did that surprise you in terms of the ruthlessness of the managers and lose two or three games, you're under pressure, like the media scrutiny under you? Compares to maybe here, is that slightly different?
You're definitely always under pressure as a manager, regardless of what league you're in. I think if you look what's happening with Dundalk here this year, the pressure happens no matter what league you're in. Over there, I think it's probably a little bit more intense because the press is on you, especially in Scotland. Like, that's, if you open the back pages of the papers in Scotland, you're not seeing the Premier League. You're looking at Scottish football.
Yeah.
The Premier League is about 6-7 deep and only a page. Mm. So, like, it's just everywhere. You're treated like you're actually a Premiership footballer up there. So, like,
did you find that hard to deal with at the start?
Well, no, I didn't. I don't read papers or anything like that, so it wasn't an issue for me. And I think there's a funny story. We were getting we played a semi final against Falkirk, maybe losing 3-0 at half time. And I didn't start the game, I was out warming up, and Tim told me out there in the dressing room after, Liam O'Brien.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? He could overhear him in the back with Nutsy and Names going, "That's it, they've ruined it for us. We're getting the sack." Blaming all the players, but so I can imagine they were under pressure at the time. But
They ruined it for us.
I didn't witness it. Now you'll have to ask him that one. He told me the story. I was out warming up, I came on at half time, but we ended up getting through or whatever. But like, pressure definitely, it is a very, very ruthless industry. Like, you're held accountable.
But that's what I mean. You're talking about the media here. I think the media, what we have here, punches above its weight, the coverage we get, because you're competing with the GAA and the rugby. And as you says, when you open up the back pages, you do well to see a Sligo Rovers player on the back page of the Star, the Sun, or whatever paper it is that you're reading. But as you said, no matter if you're at Chesterfield or you're at Hibs or you're at Bradford, when you open the local papers, it's all about Bradford or it's all about Chesterfield.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you actually get that in Sligo. You know, you open the Sligo Champion or whatever, it's just all about Sligo.
It's all about me.
And but it's intense over there. It definitely is. It's enjoyable though. Like, you are held accountable, but that's, you can't get away from that, definitely.
And when you're moving on, Chesterfield, as you say, Cookie then again comes in for you. The Hibs was it no question in your mind once he comes back in because of the experiences you had? It was a no brainer really to go back playing with him.
I was talking to Hibs, whatever, but they didn't really want to give me any more money, to be honest. 50 quid, I think, was the most I could stretch out of more. And the Cookie said, "No, we can give you a bit more than that." So, but at the time, like, I spoke to a lot of people, and it was when Rangers had just gone bust, and people were kind of saying to me, "Listen, any opportunity to get down to England, no matter what league it is, Scotland will be struggling for a few years here, so go." So I just took that advice and went with it, like, and obviously to play for him again, I knew he thought like fondly of me, and that I'd get a chance and be able to score goals under him because of how he plays and stuff. So great time at Chesterfield.
He's actually mad about you, isn't he, Cookie?
Well, he was, but then but okay, I've scored goals from Luke, so he's bound to like.
But just like, because we speak to so many people, and obviously we play it a bit ourselves or whatever. But just for people listening, in terms of a manager loving you, like the boost that gives you, and I know Cookie's like that with a lot of people. But when you genuinely know that he loves me, this fella, like, absolutely loves me.
I think especially for the forward, you know, it's a confidence position where like you're not going to go score goals if you're not confident, like, and a manager can give you that. He's very good at that. Like, he can make you, like, there's a fella at Chesterfield called Gary McSheffrey, played for Coventry, Birmingham in the Prem, and he used to call Cookie Paul McKenna, you know, the hypnotist. Because you'd, you'd bring him into the office and tell him he's dropped. And he said he'd walk out of the office thinking he was Lionel Messi. How has he done that?
It's an art and a skill.
Of course, yeah. He's a people's person. Like, yeah. He knows how to talk to people and get the best out of you. Yeah, so he's...
Because even we've spoken before, Doyle, and you've always spoken about how... not that it's been a struggle for you, but you wouldn't have been one of these lads, say, naturally gifted, and all the talk would be he's going to go to England and have this career. You've had to work hard for everything that you've got, and it's worked out great for you. But we spoke there about, I suppose, a bit of luck along the way as well. You get a manager like that who likes you, all of a sudden he's taken over another club, he brings you to that club as well. So that counts so much for as much as ability at a time as well, to have that break of the ball or a bit of luck.
Oh, 100%. Looks, I think I'm the luckiest footballer in the world. I really do. I was 24 hours away from signing back for Sligo, and only for Nutsy was at Hibs and knew me. He took a gamble for me to go over. That probably wouldn't have happened if Nutsy wasn't there.
Just for that break?
Just for that break. Once you're over there, you've got a good chance. If you can kind of do well, you might be able to stay over and then kick on. Luck has a big part to play in it. I reckon I'm the luckiest of them all, yeah.
But it's great. Well, you're not really, but it's mad that you say it. I watched the Alex Ferguson film recently, and he was the same. The film's unbelievable, but he was struggling at the time, and he broke in. He was playing for the reserves. He kind of turned to drink. I think it was St Johnstone or one of them teams in Scotland he was playing, but he was... basically struggling, and he had his heart set on being a footballer, but it wasn't happening, wasn't getting anywhere really. The father, he'd fallen out with his dad, and there was an injury to one of the players, and he got a call up to play. You're going to be playing in the first team the next day or something, and scored a hat-trick against Rangers, changed his life forever. And he spoke about that, just that one break in life, if you get it. And it's you can relate to that, in terms of, you said there you were going back to sign with Sligo Rovers, all of a sudden 24 hours later you're with Hibs.
Yeah.
And you go on to have the career that you've had,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's mad. But luck and timing as well. I'd have been out of contract the end of last season during the pandemic, and the season was cut short for us. It got finished. But if I didn't have that good season, I don't know where I'd be now.
Okay.
So I was very fortunate in that sense. So timing and luck,
I have a saying, right, Stu, and you know this. Good things happen to good people as well. As much as there's luck, you need a luck break. But I'm a firm believer as well. You do things properly or do things right. Likeable lad. You'd have a good name in the game, whatever. Things happen. Good things happen for good people as well.
Mm. Yeah. You come across as the kind of person to me that sort of, you haven't taken it for granted that you've gotten luck. You've actually appreciated it. So I would suggest to you that even though you might have gotten that break with Pat, you probably got stuck in and really made it work for you. I mean, would it be fair enough to say that as well?
Yeah, I was forced in, last out for 18 months.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you could have. You could have just potted.
First in, last out now.
No. three kids, misses.
You could have potted around. You could have potted around.
To go now.
You could have potted around for a few months, and then obviously you'd have been gone again. But the fact that you've actually gotten stuck in, you scored goals, and that's obviously what drew the attention of Kooky. He wouldn't have come in otherwise, I would have thought.
Yeah, no, of course not, but unfortunately, I was talking even before that, you talk about how I got to Sligo. Obviously Jim Crawford and Alan Moore were came in after Scully went at Shamrock Rovers,
are Shamrock Rovers your team in Dublin?
Yeah, it would be, and Morrissey's close with Kooky, and he's one that told Kooky about me. Kooky never seen me play before, he just went off Morrissey's judgement.
Okay.
So that close, so fortunately, just kicked on there, yeah.
Morrissey, a great fella. But we're going to have a Shells reunion soon as well. Yeah. But I want to know this, Doyle. I don't think I've asked you this before, even the times we spoke. The move to Cardiff City, huge move, big money move at the time for you as well, into the Championship. But is it fair to say, I want to know why it didn't work out?
I wasn't patient enough.
Okay.
I signed there on a 3.5 year. I'll tell you another funny story. So it was a deadline day deal, and so I've got in last minute. Well, it was more or less last minute anyway. It was right down to the last couple of hours that we got it done. So yeah, he's just 2.5 year deal. Will you take this? Blah blah blah. This money. He's like, yeah, of course I will. Yeah, come on, get in the car. Let's go. We're down. That night, David Webster texts me, and he goes, yeah, it's 3.5 year deal. Fair play to you. And I was like, 3.5 year deal. What's he talking about here?
So this is Dave Webster, that's with Finn Harps.
Finn Harps is my cousin, yeah. And I've gone onto my phone there, and I've gone on the Cardiff's Twitter page, says, oh, they've signed on Doyle till 2021. And I was like, there's an 2020, 2021 season. That's a 3.5 year. Rang me out and goes, that's a 3.5 year deal. He was in the hotel room next door to me. He was like, no, 2.5. I was like, it's a 3.5 year deal. I'm after seeing it. And he's like, hold on a sec. He's like, don't tell anyone about this. You're after making a mistake and giving you an extra year.
You're joking me.
I swear to God, yeah.
So he's gone in thinking,
he's
looking
gone
for
in,
two
it
and
was
a
supposed
half.
To be 2.5. They signed 2 kids that day and gave them 3.5 year deals. And oh, he must have been the next one that came in. And they were yeah, that's right, yeah. 3.5 years. That's the madness of the club, though, like mad ownership and stuff, yeah, and the people running it and that. But I swear to God, I couldn't believe me. Look.
So even at that level, things like that are happening. Like,
yeah, well, everyone knows the stories about yeah, Vincent Tan and stuff. So it is unbelievable. It is mad, like what goes
so
on
you,
there.
And it was official then, you were 3.5.
Oh, yeah, 3.5. He said, don't take that to the grave. He's like, yeah, I'll wait till Alan Colley's podcast. tell the world that.
Exactly. Save the good, juicy stuff for us.
No, but going back to why it didn't work, like I'd done reasonably well. Like when I first signed, I think I had 16 appearances, scored 5.
Yes, I have it there, yeah.
Yeah, and then I finished the season on 30 goals. So I scored 25 at Chesterfield and then the 5 at Cardiff. And when pre-season came back, I came back reasonably fit and stuff and got through pre-season, whatever. But they were ready to kind of make the next step. You know, I felt like I was just a kind of stopgap player they brought in at the time. And
who was the other strikers that were there?
Kevin Jones, competing Macheda.
Okay.
Sammy Ambiobi, Shola's little brother.
Yeah.
So I was found myself 4th, 5th choice striker. And they it got to the last game. I was on the bench. I would have played the League Cup games and stuff. And then the last game before the window shut, I was in the stand away to Forest. And I was like, no, I scored 30 goals last year. I need to double down now. I want to go out and I need to play. So I kicked doors in to get out. Because I knew after the season I had people who would want me.
Yeah.
And they did. I had loads of interest. And then I ended up at Preston alone for the season. And then they actually bought me the season after. Mm. But if I had stayed like within that contract, they did get promoted to the Premier League. Yeah. So you never know.
You've
like
got another year and a half on top of that.
The madness of that club, by Christmas, they were playing 2 midfielders up front. Because something happened, I don't know, it might be a financial fair play issue where they had to get Lukeman left, Macheda left. They ended up playing with a Pilkington up front and a Dutch kid. He was actually designed as a midfielder. And if I had stayed,
you would have got paid.
I would have played 100%, yeah.
And is that something, like you spoke even Stewie's point there about how much you appreciate the opportunity that you got and you've worked hard and made the most of that. But is that something, are you the type of person that looks back with regrets or?
No, see, that's the only thing. But it's not a regret because I left to play football and I'll never regret that.
Yeah.
Because the alternative was sitting there.
Yeah.
And I just can't do it. I can't, no way, I can't do that.
Yeah.
I have to play,
Especially as you see coming off the back of the season you had.
And I was like, I'll just be forgotten about. Yeah. Be forgotten about straight away. So, yeah, that's why I did it. Like, I don't regret it, but that's the one where you look back and you think, geez, maybe I would have had a crack at maybe staying a champ for a long time or going up and maybe getting a game or two in the Prem. And the trickle down from there is great, isn't it? So,
yeah, but think of that extra year's money, Doyler.
Yeah, that was. I'm still enjoying that now. Yeah,
because I did wonder and all. It's funny you say that you weren't patient. So after that, as you see, you went to Preston. The loan turned into a permanent move, which was a good move at the time for you. Portsmouth, Oldham, but I suppose the last couple of years really again was when the Swindon thing was unbelievable and. Mm. I do a coupon on a Saturday and you're there watching the scores. I love Jeff Stelling and the lads and the crack is 90 with them now. The good lads are gone and they've brought in other lads now or whatever. But you do your couple of bets on a Saturday, you're watching that. Next thing, Owen Doyle's name was coming up every week and I think it was 23 goals and 20. You broke the record or equaled Vardy's record, 11 consecutive matches at the time.
Yeah.
Which, as I say, it was phenomenal. Did you get the sense then, obviously you were riding high, you were flying, there was lots of talk about you, Doyler, but the Ireland thing comes up. Did it piss you off that you never really kind of were given a shout, called
in?
No,
it wasn't.
Was it ever on your radar?
No.
Never?
No. When I signed for Cardiff, I thought maybe if I get a good goal over here, I might get a chance. But yeah, like Robbie Keane still gone, Kevin Doyle still in the relevant, Shane Long.
No, but say the last couple of seasons.
Oh no, you're talking the fourth tier of English football here. Do you know what I mean? It's not good enough to be playing international football, not for Ireland.
But if
Stephen Kenny was to ring me now and say, will you come and play with me? I'll go, yeah, as long as you get me service, because I'll give you nothing outside the box. I know that. But if I had a chance in front of goal, I'm certain I'll score.
Okay.
So if you can get me service, no problem. So
what you're saying is we have to get someone who can cross the ball now. That's going to be a bit difficult.
Three or four lads.
Although I'm sure Stephen will tell you he'll get the service because that's the way he wants to play. And this is my point. We create chances and we have done in the games, but we've no one to put them in.
Yeah, I know what you're saying there, yeah, but
here's my argument on it. So if you're scoring, you're saying the fourth tier. We have fellas Championship, League One at the moment, right, getting called in as centre forward.
And I'm there this year, so you might be able to.
Exactly, so there's you now, right? And we're looking at an argument where there's lads, they're not even playing every week, Doyler. This is my point. So you're calling a lad, he might be a league above you, but he's not playing every week.
Yeah, but they're young and he's working on them for the next 2 or 3 or 4 years.
I understand.
So it'll be established. And I'm 34 on my next birthday. Like, you try here the other day, you retired at my age. It's not something you do. Like, he's not. Look at Aidan McGeady. Aidan McGeady's 34, 35, and he's been the best player in League One, and he only played half it. And he should be getting called up, and he's not, because he's working towards the future.
And
he's doing the right thing.
Okay, but say if we're going back, you're saying you're 34 now.
33.
If we're going back 4 or 5 years, did it ever cross your mind that I could be in with a shout here?
No, as I said, a Cardiff would have been the time I taught myself if I can get a good run of games and goals here, I might get called up, but I didn't get the run or the game of goals, so it wasn't going to happen.
Okay.
And I always knew that if it was going to happen, there needed to be like 5-6 injuries.
Okay.
For it to happen, which does happen. But never did. Yeah.
How have you found, because you know this sort of topic of conversation with regards out and out goal scorers and strikers, like, you know, the players are evolving all the time. And you strike me, actually, you always struck me as being an all-rounder. Like, you can get goals, but you can drop in, you can work as well. And even though you said
he doesn't know,
even though you just said it there, I'll just sniff around the box, like, you know. Are you seeing that? I mean, are goal scorers gone? I mean, is it a different footballer that's coming through? And I'm talking about the young kids that are coming through. You must be looking around the younger kids coming through, and are they a different sort of player? Are they being asked to play a different way?
It's all this 4-3-3, so they're effectively wingers now. You have a right winger and left winger, but they're fellas coming in to score goals. Would you play like that, Swindon, Bolton?
We played a 4-3-3 or 4-5-1, whatever way you want to do it, yeah. But
you'd always be the number 9.
Oh, yeah. No one want me on the wing anymore.
But you're not. Are you seeing that shortage of that type of player coming through?
Yeah, there's no one. No, that's not fair. Coming through.
They're just thinking a different way, are they?
It's hard to... But, like, it's not coming through. I wasn't... Like, at Sligo, I would have been 23 by the time I was hitting like consistent goals, you know? So it's hard to say, like, a 20, 21-year-old. I wasn't that at 20, 21. I was out on the wing a lot. And, do you know what I mean? It was until... Like, we used to have arguments. Like, used to laugh at me. Say, what's your favourite position, Doyle? I'd say, I'm a striker. And he'd go, yeah, good one.
But I remember that with you.
Until he threw me up front. And then it worked, like, you know? But, yeah, I think everyone's a 10. Everyone's a winger now. And when
was the last time you would have played as a 2 in a partnership?
Oldham. Okay. So at Oldham, what year would that have been? 2016, maybe. So 2016, yeah. And it differed. Like, we ended up as a 1 with me up there. But yeah, we had Craig Davies. Me and Craig Davies up front, yeah.
You're happy enough as the not you, you've...
Yeah, because you have to play a certain way. Like, so, for example, I was at Bradford and they played me as a target man. I can't, a disaster. Yeah. Like, I don't know what you'd be thinking doing that with me. Like, it's just, like, brutal. Mm. So, like, it's not going to work. But if it's going to be a possession-based team and you've got all them tricky players behind me, I'm confident that if you give me a chance, I can do well for you, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So, over the years, it's got to the stage now where, like, I don't get involved at all. And it's a bad game if I just don't get me shots or me, like, I don't have much interest in league player or anything like that. But I'm like, if I actually have possession in a match and it's the first half, I'll go in at half time and say to the lads, we're doing something wrong, I've had the ball too much. If it's outside the box, like, I'm having to drop in and stuff, I'm like, what's going on, lads?
Yeah.
You strike me, Doyler, there, because you mentioned that you think you're the luckiest player, whatever phrase you put on, right? And because you're such a outgoing lad with a great personality, all that, likeable, but do you play with a freedom now? Because of those things, you're not one of these lads. Like, we've spoken to players who worry and stress themselves out, and they're going out on the pitch almost thinking, fuck, I'm not ill for this. Like, I'm putting themselves under pressure before they kick a ball. As you've progressed and as things have gone well for you, are you at a point where you're just enjoying loving life type thing on the pitch?
Just take it in my stride. If it's not going well, though, because I know I'm not great at the other side of the game, where, like, I can't beat a man or anything like that. So, like, if it's getting to a stage where the game's not going great, I'll be panicking. Say we had a... Like,
I think you're being a bit hard on yourself.
At the start of this season, like, we were 20th in February. So, like, at the start of this season, it would have been, like, carnage in there, in that dressing room. Was mental. But then obviously it changed. But
what changed
when you say pressure, when you say, yeah, I would just kind of be coming my stride now regarding going into games and stuff, I probably would be a bit more laid back and I wouldn't be really worried about it anymore.
But is that something that you've built up over the years because of the confidence that has come. Like in your early stages, like us all, we would have worried going out and
picture, of course, you
want to play well, and you're putting yourself under pressure. As you spoke about it a lot, Stu, that the game would matter so much to you that you'd be going to, like, but now you're at a point.
Yeah.
But probably the goals, the confidence, all that stuff has added to the point where you're kind of like, as you mentioned, just give me a chance and I'll score.
Yeah, that type of thing. Yeah, yeah, definitely. And just time and experience just kind of has built that into me. I'd have been a disaster for years. Like, you should get Ciara on the podcast. She'll fill you in. Like, honest to God, terrible, terrible. But yeah, definitely just time and experience. Yeah.
And in the... the Bolton thing is mad because, as you says, you were 20th of February, like. Mm. And like going back to say the media and the scrutiny and the pressure, like were you getting slated for the position you were in? Because this year you were probably hoping, the expectation at the start of the year was that you would get promoted.
Yeah, we were favourites to go up. Like, we were favourites at the start of the season. But just they didn't recruit great at the start of the season. And then January they realised, and then in January they fixed it. And to be fair, like, they let the gaffer just run with it. And he's done a great job, because it was salary capped at the time. It's that salary cap since gone, but so you kind of have to be shrewd with who you could bring in and stuff. But the lads that came in just hit the ground running straight away and made such a difference for us. But there was a formation change as well. We were kind of playing that the 3-5-2, and he was like, "No, it's not working around Christmas." And I think there was 10 days, 12 days without a game, and most clubs had a few days off and stuff. We doubled down, and they were our hardest sessions all year. We were doing that. Have you heard that Bielsa mortar ball? Where it's we were doing that mortar ball with the new formation, just to drill it into us. These are the positions you have to be in. Lads were in bits coming around from that next game. All the lads felt terrible.
Because
we knew how we wanted to play then, and then the new lads would come in at this stage and gelled, and we just kicked on from there. Yeah,
I haven't heard of this mortar ball thing. Give us the.
So it's 11v11.
Yeah,
and there's no frees, no throws, no goal kicks. So any time a ball goes out of play or someone scores a goal, there's three balls on either side of the pitch, and the ball could get thrown in at any stage.
Right.
So you never know. So once the ball goes, say you think you have to win the throw-in over there, the next thing you're defending at the other end.
Right. Okay.
So,
right.
And they do it. Usually it's like 3 10-minute games, but it's carnage. Like, it's just non-stop.
Yeah. You don't get any break at all.
And that's what Bielsa does at Leeds, apparently.
Right.
And that's it. They call it Bielsa ball. Yeah.
You'd love murder ball, should we?
I think I'd actually like murder ball, yeah.
Do you know what, though? The lads, you kind of get the grip of it, because you realise then after a few weeks of doing it, you just keep the ball in play. So, I'd be playing up front against the lads at the back, and I just pass it wide there, and then get it back off. I won't press you. You know?
Be like,
I need a breather here.
It'd be like Ireland and Holland. Remember in Italian 90, Ireland and Holland, both drawn 1-1. They just kept the ball, because they knew where they were both going through to the quarterfinals.
There's always that's something we spoke about earlier. The old pros doing that. Do you find now, because look at our league, it's real young fellas all over the league, which can be a good thing, but I think there's still a balance. There's no senior pros, like, as I, when I went into the Shells dressing room, was Stewie and Jim and Owen Harry and men, like, and to tear the head off you if you weren't doing your stuff and the demands were on you. I look at the games now, and it's as much as it's great, and it might be a better watch technically, that they're trying to play and all that kind of stuff, which is lovely. Like, even Bowes, we'll get into that, but Bowes scored a team goal there, and it's the third or fourth time this year they've scored. Lovely working it up from the back through the midfield. Dawson Devoy got a goal. It was a great goal at the weekend. And as much as we're for that, and especially the way I played, I'd love to be involved in teams like that now. But the dressing room over there, can you see a seismic change in terms of, is it like that with young fellas now, that the demands don't seem to be on them now, or they don't be prepared to get after each other the way we would, or say even when you were younger?
There's a little bit of it. Definitely is a little bit of that. I think kids are different now, aren't they? We can't get away from that. All these kids coming through now would have grown up with technology and stuff that we wouldn't really have had. But, and academies as well, they all have all this training and the coaching and all, where
it's all structured.
We did have it,
like,
but it was more you kind of learned it out on the road or whatever. But it's a little bit different. But you say the league here is young, and it's great that it's young, but eventually it won't be. It's just a cycle it's going through. Mm. That's what I think. And like, all them lads will most likely be still here in 3, 4, 5 years, and they will be men, and there'll be some coming through, and the balance will be there. It's just going through a strange cycle at the minute, where there is a lot of youth around in the league.
You watch all the games, don't you?
I watch as many as I can, as many as the kids will allow as well. But yeah, there'll be one on most times,
And what have you made, I suppose, of the standard at the moment, or where?
I like the way it's definitely easier to watch than what it would have been a few years back when. I think it was getting good as well when I was leaving on the eye, especially look at Cookie's teams and stuff. And I know, even when Michael O'Neill was the man at Rovers, he was actually getting slated at the time for how he played. So even though they were winning, qualifying for Europe and stuff. Yeah, that, madness, like, yeah. And he was getting a hard time for it. It was mad.
That's funny you should mention that, because, you know, I've been asked about this before, and I think back through the years, through the, let's say 30 years, right, of the game, and I think back to the great teams in League of Ireland, and I'd remember Pats, let's say, with Paul O'Zan, Martin Russell, Eddie Gormley. They won two leagues in a row. I put ourselves in there, the mid-noughties. Then I start to kind of, maybe Pats, Bowes, 08, yeah, they had a couple of good years. And for some reason, Rovers, even though I remember commentating on it, and they achieved so much,
they get remembered.
It's very strange. It's really strange. I think it's because people are a little bit uneasy about how Michael had them playing. They were really structured, and it's incredibly harsh. It really is. But it just doesn't come into my head. And then I kind of skip Rovers. I remember Rovers. They won two leagues in a row. They qualified for the group stages of the Europa League. But I tend to find myself bypassing them and then moving on to Dundalk. And it's funny you should say that as well. And for whatever reason, I can't sort of conjure up enough reasons to kind of include that Rovers team.
And it should be.
It should be, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
No, it's
100%.
You're going to watch Juventus and talent and stuff. Unbelievable.
So where it's at now, Doyle, as you say, Sligo Rovers top of the league, going great guns. They had a game Friday night, obviously, against Finn Harps. And to be fair, now I want to go back to, before I get into the match Friday night, I was up in Talla last Monday. When we left here, I went up to the match.
In Niddle, was it?
Played Shamrock Rovers.
Oh, sorry.
And I was fucking never as happy in Talla in all my life. I was jumping around the place. But they won, obviously. They played great. And they actually were brilliant on the night. And up to now, I've always had, and I still do, to be fair, Shamrock Rovers are the favourites to win it. They're probably the best squad, even looking at it at the start. You would have thought maybe Dundalk will put it up to them, and Bohemians. I was hoping Liam has recruited far better this year compared to last year, and I was hoping that they'd push for Europe, and I think the people of Sligo would have been delighted with that. Where they find themselves is unbelievable. They've had an unbelievable start, and looking at them last Monday night, even going back to our chat about confidence and what it gives you, the confidence they must have had coming out of Talla, because they would have gone to Talla, the home of the champions and everyone's favourites, and played them off the park. Like, they were a brilliant show last week. It was the best I've seen them in a long, long time. Now, transfer 4 days to Ballybuffet and Finn Harps, and it was probably one of the worst performances I've had. But they still grind out the win. And it was, and it went down to 10 men, and it was a fucking brilliant win, so it was. So you're looking at them at the moment, I think they've given themselves an unbelievable chance.
Yeah, they're doing great, yeah. They're doing brilliant. They really are. And what will happen, and you know from being involved in the club, is that when the window opens, the fans will get behind the club, and they'll find a few bob to get to strengthen again, because they'll double down. They'll do great. They will.
Are you coming back?
I want to play in Talla. I've got a bit of unfinished business there. If I could manage to get that one.
Yeah.
I'd love to play for Rovers again. Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and can you see it happening?
I don't know. I hope so. I'd like to come back as well when I can still move. I don't want to be one of them coming back and I'm done. I'd like to be able to.
Well,
to be
a good
still
Nick
shift.
Now,
yeah,
yeah,
no,
so,
yeah,
yeah,
but
obviously, like, before you get into that side, it was always, once you went away, Ciara's from Dublin as well, is she?
Yeah.
So you were always coming home.
It's changed. Obviously, we're in Liverpool and we're settled and stuff there with the kids. But yeah, no, we just want the kids to be around the grandparents and stuff. And it's intense. There's only us two and the three of them. So
but there's good enough lads that, like, obviously listen to this would remember Danny Ventry and John Dillon. They're great friends of yours.
Yeah, they're the Liverpool family we'd have over there. Yeah, so we're very, very close. And obviously, myself and Dan have we set up a childcare business here in Dublin, which has gone reasonably well. So it's the future's definitely home for us. Yeah.
And not only the future in terms of coming home to raise the kids here, you want to come back and play?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Definitely want to come back. I'd love to win the league here. I'd love to at least have an attempt at it. It's the only one I haven't got.
Okay, managers.
In Ireland, yeah.
But listen, can I say something?
I've got 2 years left at Bolton. If anyone over there is listening to me, what's he doing?
Well, can I say something, right? I'd say there's a fair few people listen to this podcast. Stephen Bradley doesn't listen to this podcast.
Don't worry, word will filter through.
You can mark my words.
We've invited him on many times.
We'll
eventually come home, definitely.
Brilliant. It'd be great to see you back, Lynn.
The way I look at it is that Bolton would be my last club over there.
Okay.
And then we'd be moving home, yeah.
Okay, well, hopefully when you do come back play with Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers will have two league titles under the belt at that stage. But no, it was a great win for them the other night, and they're flying. As I say, at the start, if someone said to you at the, well, it's not the mid-season break, but at the break, 13 games into it now, that Sligo Rovers would be top, you probably would have thought maybe, what are you drinking?
Yeah, no, we would have. I think we spoke at the start of the season. I think we, to be fair, we looked at Rovers, Pats, Sligo, and felt that the three of them, Sligo had in particular done well in the off-season, you know, signing players. Pats were the same as well. I thought Stevie O'Donnell had signed quite well. We felt Rovers were going to be the strongest, and it would be kind of difficult to stay with them. And it looked for a while like Rovers were, you know, I mean, Rovers started off quite well this year. I think they've been in second or third gear for a while now, you know.
I'm going to say something now.
There's
right?
a boat there. They've kind of stayed in second or third gear, which means they're kind of struggling. Something isn't working somewhere. They're getting a lot of late goals. I mean, I only have to look at the Longford game. It was six seconds over.
That's
over
the second
the
time this
minute.
Season they've scored in the injury time against Longford. I know disrespect to Longford, but Longford are one of the poorest squads I've seen. Now, to be fair to Dara Doyle and Johnny Martin, they're very well organised and the boys do a good job with limited resources. They've only come up from the first division and they were even fourth in the first division. So it's not a criticism in terms of the job the boys are doing. It's the reality of where Longford are at. But Shamrock Rovers should be beating Longford comfortably, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I mean, just to come back to your point of Sligo, I think they've reacted quite well. They had a little bit of a blip 4 or 5 weeks ago, I think in and around the time where they might have actually played Rovers the last time and Derry and whatever the case may be. But they've reacted quite well and they've bounced back, exactly. The thing for them now is that there's a different dynamic in a team when you're expected to go and win the league title to when you're actually just wonder, can we do this, like, you know? And there's no doubt about it, they can do this now. I mean, any one of the three can win the league.
But that's
the reality.
You probably only realised that over the last couple of weeks, whereas
yeah,
at the start of the season.
That takes time to kind of, you know, when you're going out and playing week in, week out, and you want to go for a league title, there's a different expectation, there's a different pressure there as well. Now, look, let's see if they can go and do it. You know, a lot will come down to how Rovers come back after the break. I know they're going to sign Richie Towell. They might sign one or two others as well, which will certainly give them a kick in the arse. Like, you know, but Rovers have been here before. If you know what I mean?
They've
dealt with this and they've got the ability to go up another gear. Mm-hmm.
Still the favourite.
Key for Pats and for Sligo. To realise that they can win this, and then that will put more pressure on Shamrock Rovers. That's what we want.
I agree with Stewie. Like, Rovers to be maybe not firing on all cylinders and still coming up with them last minute winners. There's something there that is working though, because they're still up there.
But that's the thing.
They have these additions to come in now. Mm. You've got Richie coming in a couple of weeks, who's great in this league. He really is. Only played against him a few weeks over there. He's very
still flying.
And there will be one or two more because of the stature of the club, and I'd back them massively to be winning this league.
Yeah, well, I think they should be with the resources and everything they have, because the two teams that we thought was going against them are not. Now Bowes have come back up and are going really well again. Dundalk are not challenging, so I think they should be winning the league. And obviously they went on a 33 game unbeaten run, which is phenomenal at any level. They suffered the two defeats. I just think, and I get the argument, like when this was happening a few weeks ago and they were getting the late goals, the narrative around it was, it's not lucky if you keep doing it. You know what I mean? That we keep grinding teams down, whatever. They were lucky at the weekend in terms of...
Yeah, no,
they're not playing well. It gets to the point where that changes that narrative and you think, we're not playing well here. Like, we're scraping a win in the 97th.
Brad's our time. That's what it's called
now. You're doing everything you can for this move. Will you relax?
The game the other night was definitely... They even looked resigned.
They ran out of ideas.
They looked like they were resigned. They're not going to get one. Even though they kept going and look... I mean, I think he has to change things up. They're not where they need to be at the moment. The break will probably do them the world of good. Obviously, won't do Sligo any favours. But you mentioned Bowes. Bowes are now only 5 points off Pats.
Well, that
competitive top three has meant Bowes have been able to recover from that slow start. And they're coming up nicely now and playing very well.
You mentioned even when we were on about Pad in terms of how long it takes to integrate new players. You mentioned Doyler, that the lads that come in at Christmas now to hit the ground running. Keith Long, to be fair, like we say it every week, he loses his best players at the end of every season. and you have to sign another three or four and start all over again, which must be so hard. But this year, they did get off to the slow start. But the last few, and we said here 3 or 4 weeks ago, we've been saying it, well, I've been saying it consistently, that they're not far off. They've been playing really well, even without getting the results. They went out and hammered Dundalk last week. Now, that was coming, I felt. Now, I didn't think it would come against Dundalk, but I felt a drubbing was coming for someone. They followed it up. I know it was Waterford at the weekend, but a brilliant win, brilliant team goal. There's a young kid playing, Doyle, you probably know, Dawson Devoy's name. I think he's the next one that'll go away. He's outstanding talent. They probably won't like me saying that, but everyone's aware, and he's a brilliant player. And then you look at, we were chatting outside, Forrester at Pats Flying. You mentioned you played against him a wee while ago and he was brilliant.
Yeah, it was obviously you would have watched them on BBC when they played West Brom, but I think the cup game before that was against us. I was at Preston at the time. We were Championship and Peterborough were League One, but we played the game as a 3-5-2, myself and Joe Garner up front, and after 10 minutes I got the nod, Doyle, sit back on Forrester, he's running the show here, right. And I could not get near him for the rest of the game. And it's one of them games you look back, I was shattered just chasing him, and I was playing up front, I was chasing him for like 90 odd minutes, couldn't get near him. Brilliant, ran the show. And obviously I listened to his podcast here, he opened up great, and it was a great listening, and it's great to see him. Looking at the games now, and you're watching him play, he's making runs he mightn't have made a couple of years ago. He seems to be really enjoying it and stuff, and he's obviously so tidy on the ball, you can never get it off him. He's so good in possession, so it's great to see him doing well.
Yeah, because we did speak to him, it goes back to even what we were saying. I think it just the difference in a lad, once you're happy and playing football, like you're saying about the confidence you have now going out on the pitch, he's at home. Jack Byrne last year, another prime example, at home with his family around him, going out running amok every week on a Friday night, feeling the love from everybody. Like, that makes such a difference, just to be happy in your life.
Yeah. Have you ever experienced that? Because you don't strike me as the kind of lad that lets yourself, you know, you don't let you get yourself down too much. You seem to have a good outlook. And
yeah, no, I've always had confidence in myself as such. There's obviously been loads of times over there where, like, things mightn't have been going well and I would have took it home, but I've got great support, like, you know, caring me dad and all, people that you can talk to that kind of steady you on and just keep doing your thing, you'll be all right. And it's worked out like that, just from listening to people like that. But
would you be one for opening up like that? Like,
just to the people close to me, yeah. But like, I've never had to go through stuff that like Chrissy's gone through there, like, you know what I mean? But obviously, like, there would have been a few moments with injuries and stuff that happened at bad times. You know, you would have been on the brinks of moves, I got an injury and things like that. Would have been like, oh, I don't believe this, that would have been lovely when I had an extra year there and I was mainly when you look back on it now, it's just a matter about turning up every day and doing your best, and it'll kind of work out what it'll be. If you're good enough, you'll be doing it.
Good things happen to good people.
Yeah, well, just turn up basically.
I said the kids have as well. You've three kids, have you?
Three boys.
How old are they?
7, 4 and 2.
Right,
so yeah mad.
Yeah, but I'm sure you get excited coming home and training, and then you can switch off a little bit.
On the Tuesday,
there's
been a double session, and you get in the door, and they're like, "Right, Dad, out the back now for a match." Like,
oh, after murder,
after doing Bielsa's thing and training there, and they'd say it's half time, and someone scores 40 goals. If you're out there for an hour and a half,
The picture your other half put up, and when you got the promotion, all the kids, brilliant. Have they been able to go to the ground now with the COVID or the young fella?
No, they were early on when things we thought were opening back up at the start of the season. About in the stadiums, it's a hotel in the stadium, so there's a couple of hotel rooms that look out onto the pitch, and they were actually able to look out through the hotel rooms. They were staying in the hotel, not watching the matches. But that got binned when things got bad. So I think they got 2 games in, maybe. So they're obviously looking forward to next year because the club's massive. Like,
talk to us a little bit about that, Doyle, as well, because we've mentioned it a lot. And we've seen it in the last 3 or 4 weeks when the fans have come back. The football without the fans is so hard, isn't it?
Yeah. So, like, we were talking about accountability earlier on, and that's not there from the noise in the stadium, on referees, on players, and it's just different. Like, it's like them Resi games you played when you weren't in the team.
And
you're just like, oh, what? But, and there would have been stages throughout the season where, you know, when you're playing at home and you're gone 1-0 down and you've equalised and you know the roar, you'd have the momentum then. But it doesn't happen. The game starts again and it's like a fresh start.
Okay.
And it's just like, oh, what's
it's like starting all over again.
Yeah, where you know that you'd have these now, you'd have them.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't there, especially at our place, because people coming to us as their cup final because of the stature of the club and the league. So disappointing in that sense, because, like, I think they're saying that, like, it's 15,000 at every home game, more or less. I think they sold 8,000 season tickets last year, knowing that they couldn't get in.
But for next year, now they're all coming back, it'll be amazing.
Ah, oh, brilliant. Can't wait. Yeah, can't wait. It's going
to
be great.
Because even us, like, we've obviously gone to the games and worked at the games, and look, you're grateful for that you can still go to the games. But, you'd often hear, like, the lazy argument against players. Oh, they're getting well paid. You know, the stupid arguments to hear about people. But it's so hard to get yourself going, and you're training all week. You want to go out and showcase yourself in front of your 10,000, your 15, even 3,000 or 500, whatever it is that you're, whatever level you're playing at. And to have no fans there, it's really difficult to get, like, and whatever out of one-off game, like we played, was it Steaua Bucharest, was a one-off. But if it's week, every week, like, you're kind of like, fuck, at what point do you say, this is shite?
No, and I agree with you, but you also have to be like, the people are listening to this that aren't working at the minute, and we were out there grafting, and do you know what I mean? It's real to get out of the house every day as such. But no, you're right. The game is different when there's no fans there. 100%. It's not the same.
In all aspects.
It's not the same. Yeah. The buzz even walking into the ground, like, it's just not there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's. No, it's definitely different. I can't wait to have them back. Like, you can see now, looking at them playoff games and stuff. Ah, brilliant. Yeah. And
getting after referees and all,
brilliant,
and everything.
Yeah, yeah. You watch, I think it was the championship and the penalty. Yeah, I don't think it would have been given. Only for the roar.
We have to mention, we mentioned him earlier, Tim Clancy, a friend of yours, doing unbelievable things. To be fair, Drogheda have had a brilliant start. I know they lost the other night, but coming off the back of four wins, they got beat by Derry Friday night, but if you were to offer Tim at the start of the season, you'd be sitting in fourth after going into the break, a chance now to maybe push on with Europe or whatever the expectation or the aspirations are, he would have snapped your hand off.
Yeah, and he's done such a good job from day one there, really. Like, I think they challenged the year they didn't go up, and then eventually goes up, and now he's challenging for Europe with Drogheda, like, and exceeding expectations. And you look at the team, when you watch them play, they've got good energy, they're really organised, which I'm sure is a hard thing to do for a part-time team when they're only able to train in the evenings a couple of nights a week or whatever. And do you know what? When we were playing together, I knew he was going to be a gaffer.
That was my next question. Was it always kind of sticking out that Tim wanted to go down that road?
Yeah, definitely. He'd come in after matches, he'd have an opinion on what just happened, but it makes sense. You know, some lads would come in and just talk shy. He'd come in and it'd make sense what he was saying. And for example, Nutsy do the set piece videos and stuff. Tim would nearly take it upon it. Nutsy would run the video and kind of like, have a watch of this lad. Tim would kind of, do you mind stopping? Do you want me to do this? And do you want him to do that here, there? And he kind of take it upon himself to really go into detail on what was going on. And you knew he has the eye for the game, and he loves looking at it and watching it and seeing it. So, I think Drogheda to be lucky to hold on to him for much longer. Like, if
he'll be absolutely devastated. You're hooring yourself out here for Shamrock Rovers.
Hope he gets it over, Sam. No, but you look at, like, and it might be bad of me to say this, but like, you look at what's going on at Dundalk at the minute, and like, I know they're going through a tough time, especially the ownership. I don't like going and get the manager from your local rivals is a win for the ownership of Dundalk, and it's not a bad one because he's exceeding expectations in his job, and you can see he's a good young manager that knows the game. I just don't know why they haven't done it already.
Yeah, well, we don't know why they haven't appointed a manager at all, and we don't really know in terms of the whole story. It's been a disaster, really.
I wouldn't write them off, though. You know, you've got a good lot of players there, and once they get a manager in,
that's the
that
thing.
Can sort them, you never know. It's like I can tell you because of what I've just been through this season, that if a manager comes in now in this week or two, and just because the players are there.
The players are there. No, 100%
you just,
the
you just get
there.
Them on board, you tell them what you want to do, and bang, it could work, definitely.
Because
I wouldn't write them off.
Well, Friday night they went to Inchicore and won 2-0 and the week before they beat Shamrock Rovers. Now in between they got hammered 5-1, so it's kind of been that up and down season all year and the uncertainty around it. But definitely the squad is there, like the players are there to compete or to be challenging at the top, whatever. Like, because as I say, you look at the other teams that are there now, Drogheda, Finn Harps, like they're every bit as good as any of them teams to be up near the top, or Sligo, Pats. It'll be interesting to see what to do. Like up to this point we've always questioned why they haven't. We've kind of come to the conclusion now they've left it to the break. It'll be interesting to see during the break, will a new manager come in? Or I think I was reading yesterday. Now, I said all along, I don't think Jim McGilton wants to take it. He would have taken it by now if he was going to take it. But I was reading yesterday now there may be talk he might take it. So,
yeah, it's very difficult to second guess what's going on at Dundalk. I think there's like there's two things going on at the same time. There's the running of the team, you know, and the players and the day-to-day. And then there's a little bit... There's uncertain questions been asked about the actual club itself. What direction are the club going to go in? So it seems to be adding more confusion to it than anything else. But when you come back to just the sheer the league stuff, you know, the fact that Rovers aren't running away with it has again, it's benefited Bowes, we just mentioned that, and it's benefiting Dundalk as well. I mean, Rovers have drawn 3, lost 2, which is kind of unheard of. You think a at this stage of the season, you thought they would have been well clear. But the competitiveness that Pats and Sligo are now bringing to that top three is and benefiting Bowles Dundalk. Now. It's just giving Bowles Dundalk a chance to kind of claw themselves back into a little bit of contention. The break now as well, which is going to give them a little bit of time just to adjust, maybe get a couple of players in. Dundalk are well capable of bringing in players, but we know Rovers are as well. So, look, I'm from a neutral's point of view, it's great that we have that. You know, it's certainly set up now to be a really competitive second half of the season.
It sets it up brilliant, yeah. I have to give a mention as well to John Mann and Buckley. I think they've been the best partnership centre-half in the league this year. They've been absolutely brilliant, particularly last Monday night. Buckley up in Tala was unreal. Young Mann is another one. I mentioned Dawson Devoy, that I think he has a great chance. I think John Mann has an unbelievable chance. All the attributes as well. Young McGinty, the goalkeeper, another one, looks like he is a huge future ahead of him. A brilliant save Friday night. I think Greg Bulger has been the signing of the season so far. Going back to his old club last Monday night with a point to prove. And did he prove his point? He was unbelievable last Friday. Mm. And I think he's been the difference in terms of, we spoke about older players, or you could class Greg as one of those old school pros or whatever you want to put on it now. And that's the difference. You see him on the pitch barking orders and demanding off the whole lot of them. Sligo, that's what was missing from Sligo for the last 3 or 4 years. He's come in all of a sudden, he's rallying them all around him. Deegan, something similar at Drogheda, you can see him doing the same. Like, it makes such a difference without bollocking fellas out of it. But you need a fella to be there kind of and giving a fella a kick up the arse, like.
Yeah, just holding standards and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No, Deegan definitely does that, like, yeah. If you know, he's following on Instagram, he's the League of Ireland, David Goggins.
Yeah. We're going to get him in because I follow him on Instagram. Some of his stuff, he's inspirational. Yeah. Good things happen to good people.
Oh, stop it.
Okay, Doyler, it's been an absolute pleasure, and fair play to you taking the time out to come in. What's the plans for the next couple of weeks while you're home?
Just chill out with the family and stuff, and very good. Just enjoy the time off, yeah.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. I loved the chat we had last year, so it's been. You said you were a fan of us, so we're a big fan of you as well. So fair play to you. Before we finish up, I just want to give the first division results. Shelburne, Stu, running away with it, flying. We were obviously down there last Friday, and again they had a brilliant win against Galway Friday night. Beat them 4-0. Good to see. Cove beating Cork 1-0. Treaty, Tommy Barrett, we keep mentioning Tommy's doing a brilliant job, beating Bray 2-0. Cabin Teely 0, Wexford. Ian Ryan, an old teammate of yours, yeah. Doyler, first win for Wexford. He only took the job there, I think, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, so that's a big scalp actually to beat Cabin Teely away, so fair play to him. And UCD beat Athlone 3-2 away. The Women's National League, Shelburne 0, Wexford 0, Athlone 2, Bohemians 3, Piemont 4, Galway 0, and Treaty 0, DLR Waves 5. Big thanks to Paul Morris, as always. Thank you, Paul. Stewie, thank you. Benetti Menswear as well for sponsoring and looking after us every week, so thanks very much. And to people listening as well, I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope you enjoyed Shamrock Rovers' Owen Doyle. Talk to you next week, people.
Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.